Today's interview is with Sandy Roberts, and she is a disability advocate, and she is a disabled person as well. And she caught my eye on Instagram. I speak about this when we're talking, but she is super vulnerable and super open about her story and about how it feels to be disabled. She is changing and shifting perspectives about how society views disabled people. And it's amazing. And she's really only been fully disabled in a wheelchair for 3 years, but she has had problems in her life, which started with an accident when she was 15, which she gets into. But she's a mom of three. She is married in her second marriage, and she is from Cotswold in England. So she has a lovely accent, and she is beautiful. She is so lit up about what she's doing in the world. And she describes herself as, happier than she's ever been. And when you listen to her, you can tell that she is a different person because of her disability. And she is totally okay with it and happy about it. So without any further ado, let's listen to Sandy's story.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today I have with me Sandy Roberts. Hi, Sandy.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes. And yes, another lovely accent to talk to. I love listening to you talk all day. I probably am quieter when I have people with accents on because I like them so much. Yes. And I found Sandy on Instagram and I was taken aback with her because she's super open and vulnerable, and she is a disability advocate. And she's disabled herself. And so I was super fascinated and I reached out to her and she was willing to come on here and share her story. So welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Laurie. I am absolutely honored to be here. So it feels very special. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And so I know nothing. We just had like a quick 5-minute conversation before I hit record. So I'm going to be learning about you and your life as we go. But I'm very curious because you were saying that in the notes you sent me that you became disabled at 48 and you're 51 and you haven't been disabled too long. But you also told me, and I saw this on your website too, that you are happier than you've ever been. And that is so amazing and beautiful. And I know that my audience can learn so much from you and your perspective. So please share like a little bit about you and what's happened and how you got to the place you're in and why you're so happy.
Well, we might need more than this time. But this is part one of many.
Yeah, we can do that.
If you want to hear more. So I actually had my first brush with disability when I was 15. I had a nasty fall and did some damage to my lower spine and my pelvis, which meant that I couldn't walk. So for a year, I almost lived in hospital. I was in there so long. I was still at school and they had to send a tutor to tutor me at the school. It was a really difficult time in my life.
Plus an age at that age, you're like just starting to like boys and
yeah, I had a boyfriend
taken away from.
It was really challenging because lots was going on in my life at the time. And then suddenly I had, nobody was in my life because I was completely bedbound, or I was in the hospital and nobody was, you know, no school friends were coming or any of that. So it's a big change. And
now it must have been a bad fall. Can you describe what happened? Or
so I twisted my pelvis, and it basically got the two sacroiliac joints, the SI joints that hold your hips, your kind of your legs into your spine. They got ripped out of the sockets, and all the ligaments that held in got all torn. So there was instability in those joints. They would just, they would push them back in doing the maneuver that I'm sure lots of people are used to with, you know, chiropractors and things like that. They push them back in, and then I'd just have to turn or sneeze and they would just dislocate. So I wasn't able to walk, and it was very painful, obviously, but caused a lot of damage to nerves in my legs and things where they'd kind of put things back in different ways, and it caught nerves and things. So it wasn't great. But there wasn't even allowed a wheelchair. This is interesting, the pivot, because I wasn't allowed a wheelchair because of the damage it would do to my spine. But I started to get really affected mentally by the fact that I was cooped up and couldn't go anywhere or see anybody. And I did start to be, this was my first brush with poor mental health, because I started to kind of almost be hallucinating and not sure what was real and what wasn't real, because complete isolation when I wasn't in the hospital, nobody, you know, my mum was coming in, but that was it really. It's not healthy at any time, but at that particular time I wasn't coping. So she got me a wheelchair so that she could get me outside. And I can remember seeing, my boyfriend took me for a walk and seeing a couple who were holding hands and thinking, well, I can't hold his hand. I can't hold anyone's hand if I'm in a wheelchair. And this is a very bad thing to be. The wheelchair became this awful thing that I needed to escape from, which is very interesting considering what we'll talk about later. And it motivated me to go, I'm going to get out of it. I'm going to get out of it. Which in and of itself, striving to be better isn't a bad thing, but it had the unfortunate consequence of me disregarding the pain signals from my body, and just because I'm an A-type personality, I've always believed if you want something, you work hard enough, you'll get it. So I worked hard. I had some treatments at the hospital, some procedures, and then I started to become stronger, and I managed to go back to college and get my exams, and life kind of moved on until I fell pregnant. And then when you're pregnant, you get a hormone that relaxes your pelvis, doesn't it? Well, that went to extremes in me and it just kept falling out again. So it just wasn't great. Pregnancy wasn't a good idea for me. So I started to have problems with my function at that point, but just ignored it. And
and you're in your 20s or your 30s? When were you?
Yeah, I was in my 20s. Okay. After the second baby, they were said, don't have any more because it's, you know, could seriously do some problems. And I did actually have another baby, and it did cause a lot of problems. And that was a big turning point in my health of my spine. So I struggled, but all I could think of was I cannot get back in that wheelchair. And the doctors were saying to me, you've got to face the reality that by the time you're 30, you will be in a wheelchair. And I was like, I won't, you watch me. I will not give in and I will not be that. And the language that I used was incredibly ableist, but I didn't, that was what I'd associated with the wheelchair as failure. And then that kind of progressed. I didn't end up in a wheelchair as the language I would use at the time. But consequently, I put my body through an absolute nightmare of pain and dysfunction and caused a lot of problems. Consequently, I had no idea what pain meant, and I would continue to do activities to the point that I was damaging my body physically and thinking that was okay. And then in 2019, I collapsed. I was ill at the time, and that was the trigger for my condition. For obviously I've got spinal problems and all of that going on and arthritis and stuff, but the condition that happened in 2019 is called functional neurological disorder, It's apparently a rare condition, but actually it's not, because a lot of people do have it, but they get misdiagnosed or it goes without being picked up. And it's basically a condition where the signals between your brain and your body misfire and don't act the way that they should do. And it can affect your entire body. So because everything's controlled by your brain, it can affect every area of your body. People are blind, deaf, have urinary or bowel problems, mobility problems, pain, every single thing you can imagine. And I collapsed with what looked like a stroke, and they thought it was a stroke, took me in as if it was a stroke, but it was determined that it was a functional stroke. So the symptoms were the same, but the cause is different. And that's when my life really changed.
Because, and were you unable to move, like a stroke usually takes, part of your face or whatever? Did you lose mobility?
My face. Mm-hmm. And my face still does do this now. It just, it kind of dropped on one side and pulled tight on the other side, which was one of the reasons. And I lost function in one side of my body. And that progressed to losing function in, I had complete, total body paralysis. So the only thing I could move was my eyes. I couldn't move my mouth, and I was screaming in my head, but it was extremely terrifying. It's probably the most scared I've ever been in my entire life.
So did that mean you couldn't communicate since you couldn't move your mouth?
Wow. I couldn't talk. And it was happening, and I had no way to say to people what was going on and what I was feeling. But it was very scary to have a complete body paralysis. I wouldn't want to go back to that very difficult place, because you don't get a warning. You don't get sort of a notification in the post, in 2 weeks' time, you're going to become completely paralyzed. So you should let everyone know that that's going to be what's happening. You just find yourself in this situation. I think that's what people think about life in general, that you're going to get some kind of warning, but it can change in a heartbeat. And everything, every part of your life can be turned upside down, which is what happened to me. Everything changed.
How long were you in the hospital?
So this is part of the problem. With FND, it's very, very much misunderstood. And a lot of doctors haven't even heard of it. So when they found out that it wasn't a stroke, they basically said that there's nothing seriously wrong with you. And at this point I couldn't move, so I kind of didn't understand. I was having these really terrible tremors that, like, I could feel them coming on, and then suddenly imagine a fish flopping by 100 times faster than you would see it, so just like drilling of my arms and my legs, like a full-on seizure, but I was completely aware. So I didn't understand what was going on. And they said, well, it's not a stroke and it's nothing serious. And I tuned out after that.
How can it not be serious? You know, I mean, that's crazy.
It was really strange, because I was thinking, this what's going on with my body feels very serious. And you're telling me, there's a terminology for it called being gaslit. It's not serious. Yeah. I'm experiencing this horrific symptoms, and I'm terrified, and you think that that's not serious. And I appreciate that I wasn't going to die from it. However, people have died from complications from FND, mainly because they don't get the treatment they need. So it's a very dangerous condition in some respects. And so, but I just wanted to be out of that hospital. I've got a lot of trauma relating to hospitals, as you can imagine. I wanted to go away. So I basically threw my teddy out of the cot and said, well, if you're saying it's nothing serious, I'm going home. And which is terribly naive and stupid thing to have done, because I thought I'd get the care at home, and I didn't. And I had to champion myself with my doctors to get support. And I also thought at the time I just had to relearn how to walk and then I would be fine. And when I was in a residential hospital for FND for a 2 week period was when I found out that you cannot be cured from FND, and that me thinking I was going to be the poster poster girl for FND. Watch me, I'm going to work really hard. And actually, FND is a condition that you shouldn't work hard at, because when you're focusing attention on what's wrong, you're actually reinforcing these incorrect neural pathways. So I'd been doing it wrong. By the time I got there, I'd had the condition for about a year, I think. And so I'd been my own worst enemy. And that was really hard to hear. I struggled with that because all of my coping strategies in life had been, don't worry about it. You just have to focus and work really hard and you will overcome everything. And
as is most, you know, when you experience a injury,
you go
through therapy, you know, you get the part working again. And so that is just like, to me, what anybody would do.
Yeah. It was an enlightening, and they were wonderful, because I basically cried for 5 days without stopping, because I just was mourning the life that I thought I was going to have and didn't have any coping strategies to cope with that information. And I didn't know how to process it, because it was like somebody describing a colour you've never seen. It didn't make sense to me that I couldn't work my way out of this. What do you mean I can't work my way out of it? And they were so kind and understanding, because they'd seen it before. But it was the turning point for me, because I had to then accept this was my life now. Stop trying to chase what was or what you think you're going to have, and be here right now. This, you need to accept where you are right now. And if something was to change in the future, then wonderful, whatever. Don't even think about it. Focus on where you are right now and focus on trying to become happy with what you've got in your life right at this very moment without changing anything. And that was a really big light bulb moment for me. And I went from, I use this analogy a lot, but it being this vacuum of a human being, like a shell, an empty shell, because the way I defined my worth until that point had been working hard, being successful in my career, being a good wife, whatever, you know, you want to class as good. But, you know, being, I'd only just got married 3 months before to my husband. So this was a big shock to us. Being able to provide for my family financially, emotionally, physically, I couldn't do any of those things. And instead, they, with no training or warning, suddenly had to become my carer. I couldn't eat, couldn't go to the toilet, I couldn't do anything for myself. And emotionally, I felt that a complete and utter burden to my family, like a waste of a human being on this planet. What was the point of me being here? And I couldn't find one, because there was nothing that I could say, well, I'm worthwhile as a human because I. Mm-hmm. Those things that would finish that sentence had gone. I was like, well, if not that, then what am I? Who am I? I just bring misery and pain to my family, and there's no point in me breathing. And it was a very, very, very low point.
So let me understand the timeline. So you were 48 when this happened. Mm-hmm. And so you had married, you remarried, or you, because you had three kids, you said.
Yeah. So I was remarried. Okay. Yeah.
Remarried. And so how old are your kids at this point? Are they not adults yet? Right.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So my daughter would have been 21.
Okay.
And another one would have been 25. And then my son would have been 28.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I was thinking kids at home, and oh my gosh.
Yeah.
All right.
So I kind of, between being in the hospital the first time collapsing and going into the hospital the second time, was when I had this vacuum empty feeling. And then with the hospital stay, that's when I thought, I need to kick up the bum, because I'm still here. I'm breathing. I have life force, and I can't let that go to waste, because so many people don't have that. I'd lost a friend to cancer, and that was hard for me, and I'm still here. I might not know what that means, but I felt like I needed, I had a, a duty or a responsibility to use that life force for something and not let it go to waste by just feeling sorry for myself. Don't get me wrong, there was a period where I felt sorry for myself. I think that's natural and human, and you need to allow yourself to feel those feelings. But after a while, I was kind of like, imagine this crumpled heap on the floor, kind of going, huh, oh, okay, I feel a little bit better. What should I do now then? And it was, what, I don't know what to do. And then it came to me that I felt so alone when I got this condition. And I reached out to the online community, and there wasn't very much there. And when I started to feel better about myself, I wanted to journal that process. And so for myself, it was therapeutic, but also with the side effect of helping somebody else so they never felt that way, if I could just let people know I was there. And as that process continued, I started to feel like my, not my old self, but my full self. And I'm a bubbly, vivacious, sexy kind of person. And there wasn't anywhere for me to feel represented or inspired by that. There seemed to be this huge gap. And I thought, well, maybe I should do that then. Maybe I should be the person that's doing this, because there are disabled people who are champions for body confidence and fashion and whatever, feeling, living your best life. There are those people. And there are lots of midlife people, and there are lots of women who do that. But the intersection of all three of those things is very, very underrepresented. And so I thought, okay, you know, I'm dealing with perimenopause, and I'm dealing with my disability, and I'm dealing with, you know, all kinds of things that come from a woman at this time in her life. You know, children are growing up and leaving home, and there's something to be said about talking about that. We need to talk about that. And that's where I kind of got to. And I posted a series of pros, I suppose you'd call them, where I spoke about the transformation of this empty shell to this goddess, and it was called The Goddess in the Shell. And I documented it over 5 days on my social media with photographs that I took of myself in just kind of underwear, I'd say, but it was just to remove the clothing from it. And I didn't edit anything out. It showed lumps and bumps and wrinkles and, you know, cellulite and all that, and spoke about the beauty of myself in this moment without filtering and changing or wishing it to be anything other than what it was. And
yeah, I saw those. I mean, they're beautiful pictures. Beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I was like, man, she has guts.
Well, I have to tell you, before I hit play on that, not play, post, I had to speak to my friend, said, I feel sick. I'm terrified. What if people make fun of me? What if? And she said, just post it, just do it. And we'll be here to support you afterwards if something happens to make you feel bad, but you have got a voice here. And I did, and I got such an incredible amount of support from that, and from doing that, that it really reinforced in me that was what I needed to do. It was going very, I was kind of a bit drifting, so I didn't really know, have a direction. And then that was like, okay, this is what people need. I have now found my purpose. This is what I'm here to do. I'm here to help people. And everything just made sense at that moment.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting too, is that when I look at those pictures, I didn't see the wheelchair really, you know, that's the interesting thing. And, you know, honestly, bathing suits show more than your lingerie did. And it was so pretty. You had such good taste, and made me think, oh, I need to up my lingerie game.
You can have some of mine. I've got loads in mine. I need an entire wardrobe just
for And the way you described it, you made it sound like, you know, you described cellulite, and you described the things that I didn't even see in those pictures. It's kind of funny. Yeah. That's what you were thinking internally, but then people who see it, the response you got was because people didn't see the things that you were so worried about.
And nowadays I get messages from people, and I'm all for championing people to use their mobility devices. And this is going back to the beginning of the thing, because at that time in my life, I saw the wheelchair as an object of shame and pity and failure. And then when I had all of my mobility removed, that wheelchair became my freedom. And I no longer saw it with these ableist eyes of the way that society teaches us to look at with people in wheelchairs or disabled people in general with pity. And I realized that I'm not this version of me. If I'd known I was going to be this version, I wouldn't have worried about it, you know. And I got in that wheelchair and spun around my house feeling like I was flying. Literally, like I'm about to do an editorial photo shoot to document this, because it is a beautiful feeling. And I was paralyzed before by my internal ableism, by society's views of what disabled means and its expectations for how disabled people should behave. I was paralyzed by those things without my wheelchair. Put me in my wheelchair and I'm no longer paralyzed. I'm free. My mind is free. Do you know what I mean? So it's so turned it on
crazy.
Its head.
Yeah. Such a different way of looking at, you know, what paralysis would you prefer?
Exactly. Exactly.
If you had to choose. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and now
I love your Instagram handle too.
Thank you.
So because, you know, it's so apropos for someone who has, you know, the positive and the abundant mindset, and it's the silver linings.
Yes. Yeah. But I loved what you said.
It has a kind of a double meaning, I guess.
Because it's got the search in there. But I loved what you said at the beginning, that you appreciated my vulnerability and the rawness to what I post, because I really think it's incredibly important that we honor all of our emotions and that none are worth less than the other. And this is all a relatively new self-awareness for me over the last few years, because I was somebody who swallowed those emotions and they became hard rocks in my chest. And I always thought that if I felt pain, it was something to get rid of and move through as fast as possible, because it's a horrible feeling. And I've had some difficult things happen in my life that aren't just to do with my disability, that are incredibly painful, that the pain from them felt like I could die from it, you know. And it's only recently that I've realized that I can sit in that pain and I can let it flow, and I'm not going to have anything happen to me. It might be an unpleasant sensation, but conversely, I take not pleasure but happiness in knowing that letting that pain have its time will lessen the effect of it on me and will be healthier for me in the long run. And I will be able to have this free flowing sense of emotions coming through me and out again, rather than being a bottleneck and stuck inside of me. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like what I was just thinking was, you went from internally focused to, you know, thinking about how can I be of service to the world? Like, how can I, you kind of divorced yourself to help others. And then when that became your mission, that's when you became unparalyzed to that. Yeah. That's beautiful.
That's very true. I don't think of inwardly of myself all the time now. It's more of a case of how can I turn this to helping people. And it's at the very core of who I am, being able to take pain, learn from it for the purpose of helping others whose lives I might be blessed enough to touch. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you talk about something that you told me before I hit record, which was really powerful, and I think other people need to hear it? Is your perspective on how your happiness comes not despite your handicap, but because of your handicap. So can you touch on that?
Yeah, because people do use those words a lot without the understanding of the ramifications of how it feels to be on the receiving end of she's happy despite being disabled. She's happy despite being in a wheelchair. Now, I've just told you how glorious it feels being in a wheelchair. When somebody says, oh, I'm so glad you're happy despite that, it's very jarring because it makes you question your reality. Well, hang on a minute, my reality isn't the one that you're projecting onto me. And I just feel very uncomfortable about that. And the person speaking to you 99.9% of the time is not going to be aware of that. They're not going to know that that is how it makes you feel. So I do think there's opportunity to educate people and I say that with love. I'm not saying it from a critical position because I was one of those people for 48 years. So it's okay to get things wrong, learn from it and do different going forwards. And that's what's important. It doesn't matter what's happened before. Now we know, don't say, oh, she's happy despite being disabled. She's happy despite. And also not thinking about overcoming her disability, because I don't believe that I am broken. I don't believe I need to overcome anything, because this journey that I have been on, this life that I get to live as a disabled person, has brought so much joy and love into my life that I would not have had this not happened to me. And I've helped, I believe, if the messages are to be believed, so many other people because I became disabled. I don't feel that I need to change anything about my life. I'd like the world to change around me to make my experience of being disabled easier and less painful, so I could have access to the whole world, for example, not have to think, is there going to be a bathroom for me to use when I go to that venue? I find it painful when I'm living the best life that I've ever lived, feeling fulfilled, feeling more like I know myself than I've ever done. And then somebody says about overcoming the reason that I feel all those things. I don't want to overcome them. There's so much colour that can come from having disabled people in your life. They bring so much richness and diversity and other points of view to the experience of living on this planet that without them would be a very bland existence. And I find it very difficult to hear when you see the medical profession and people wanting to eradicate all types of different abilities and seeing those things as so awful that they need to breed them out of the human race. I find that very difficult. I understand why they might think that, because they look through the lens of society's expectations and beliefs of what being disabled means. But speak to disabled people, find out what they think and feel, because I'm very sure that the huge majority of disabled people just want the world to change, not themselves. It's not the life that you think it is. And then when you're trying to say, well, we don't want those people in human race anymore, so we are going to genetically modify it out, we are going to whatever, then if they had done that, then I wouldn't have this opportunity to be the person that I am now. And I'm a much better person than I was 3-4 years ago. I'm kinder, I'm nicer, I'm more self-aware, I do more good for this planet that I live on, I help more people. And I wouldn't have done any of those things if I hadn't had this experience. And we're so scared as a race, as a humanity, we're so scared of something that's different to what we know. And I think if we could just start with, right when children are small, educating them that being disabled is nothing bad or scary. It's a thing, it's a neutral state that people can be exposed to at any time. Anyone at any time in their life could fall into that category. In fact, if we're lucky to live long enough, we will fall into that category because our bodies will fail at some point. If we could educate children, see it in billboards, magazines, TV, so that it's not an unusual thing. They become desensitized to this shocking notion of, oh, there's a disabled person. And I don't represent all of the disability community. I'm very palatable, and I'm saying that with air quotes, because I look as every day as a non-disabled person, but I happen to be sitting down. And there's a lot of disabled people don't look like me. And we need to normalize seeing all kinds of disabled people in all walks of life, in TV shows, in magazine adverts, everywhere, from little kids with their books, so that there's always going to be a disabled person in them, more than one. You know, don't just tick a box and say that's diversity done.
Then, yeah, it's funny because the world we live in right now, diversity is more has to do with sexuality and race, and the disability mm-hmm. piece is kind of left out. Lost. And it's such an interesting point. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if because parents, when they're out and there's a disabled person, and children will stare because children are curious and it's different and they want to know. And then the parents will go, oh, no, you mustn't. Don't stare. Don't look. And they're just instilling in the child that that's something.
Yes.
Not of the same and should be differentiated and possibly should be feared in some way. It's not helpful. So we need to change it, but it needs to start from a very young age so that they grow up saying, well, of course I've got, you know, five disabled people in my office. Why wouldn't I? That's just a very bizarre thing to think about. That's what we want, you know?
Yeah. What you were saying when I was thinking about this is when society wants to eradicate the things that they see as disabilities. So we have, like, you know, everybody is cookie cutter is what, it, yeah. what that says to me. But yeah, they're assuming that you'd be happier as a non-disabled person when you've just said you were a shell before and yeah. now you're a goddess. So yeah. it's like, yeah, that's, and, yeah.
Myself as a non-disabled person chasing success, trying to find my sense of self-worth from all of these external factors, it was not healthy for me and not helpful to the world that I live in. I wasn't contributing in any way to the world. And I think we it's starting to change. We're starting to get people to pay attention. A lot more needs to be done. But if any one of your listeners is going to take something away from this, it's to change the language they might use and understand that being disabled can be a glorious existence. It's not without its difficulties. If you want to help somebody, don't try and think of how you can help them overcome their disability. Ask them, how can I make this activity easier for you? What access needs do you have? What can I do? Could I phone that venue for you and check that it's accessible? And if it's not, let's all go somewhere else that is and support the disabled community in that way. That is very appreciated.
So what are you looking forward to, since you're so sounds like you're so busy and you clearly have this platform now that I'm sure a lot of people are interested in you helping with whatever. You even mentioned that you were a part of London Fashion Week.
Yes, and I'm going to be doing some more modelling for that in September. So that's really exciting. I've been on TV as well doing it, and again, it's a case of just getting people used to seeing that. We had one of my friends on national TV doing some modelling today, which was wonderful to see. We need more of that, so it's not an exception. But I am currently working on a really, really exciting project because, as I said to you, this has all kind of been centred around how I can help people. And for a long while, I've noticed that fashion plays a huge role in my life. I dress to communicate outwardly how I want to be received, but also inwardly, what do I want to feel today? And I will dress for those things. And it makes me really happy, and it can change lives, what you wear. But when you're disabled, when you're in a wheelchair specifically, it's very hard to know what to wear, what works in a wheelchair, what's going to get trapped in your wheels, or is going to get dirty, and or is going to be uncomfortable, and what looks good sat down, because the lines of clothes change drastically when you sit down. And I noticed that people weren't doing this. There's an awful lot of, this is what I wore, get ready with me, look at the great outfit that I found, but everyone's stood up. And as a disabled person, you struggle to know where you can go to look good. Where's your inspiration? You can't open a fashion magazine and see yourself. So you can make a lot of mistakes, or you can feel the opposite, and that I'm just not going to do anything. I'm just going to wear, you know, jogging bottoms and slouchy oversized clothes all the time, not just because it's comfortable, which it is, and we all do wear those things, but because I have no choice. I don't know what else to do, so I'm going to hide myself away. The difficulty comes is when you decide that you're not going to do that, and then you still don't know what to do. So I've been working in the background on for a long time on trying to change that. And recently it's just started. Just filmed our first episode of a new project called Roll with Style. And it's going to give real practical style advice on how to dress in a wheelchair and where to buy these items. So we will find them and say, this is a great item, this is how much it costs, and this is where you can find it. So myself and Natalie Kerr, she's a style and image consultant for the celebrity world, but she has a social heart, a real heart of giving like me. And together we are working on creating video content so that we can say, this is the problem that this person has got. This is how we've solved it, and it might help you as well. So real practical guidance on what could work for that person. And I am beyond excited.
That's cool. Project. Do you have a background in fashion at all, or just a love of it?
Just a love of it. And how before I became disabled, I was very much about keeping up with things, making sure I looked a certain way. Then I became disabled and just went the opposite way and just was wearing bland grey slouchy clothes all the time. And now I'm finding like, oh, I can do this. But it's hard because you'll pick this item from here and this item from here, and you're trying to mix and match to make it work. And if you don't know if you're not naturally gifted to know what things look like in certain states, people can find it hard to picture or feel scared of communicating that to the world. They need confidence boosting, they need reassurance, they need me to help them feel that they can do it, can do that. And then Natalie has she's an image and style consultant for the last, I think it's 10 years, so she is extremely good at knowing what looks good on different body shapes and how to dress those. So combined with my knowledge of what works in a wheelchair and what doesn't work in a wheelchair, and our love of fashion, and it's just amazing.
Well, first of all, I also have to say that you look amazing. You have this purple pop outfit. Is it a dress or is it just a top?
Yes, this is a dress. Thank gorgeous. You. It's really comfortable.
Yeah. And, I just thought of this and I thought, do you have feeling in your legs or you just, yeah, you do. So
yeah, like, periodically I don't, but yeah. Most of the time I do.
So texture too, even mm-hmm. if you don't have feeling in your legs, but the texture of the clothes on your body was probably important too. So when you're wearing like something cheap, I would say that your senses are more in tune, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is that true?
Yes, themes, labels in the clothes, they can irritate people's skin. Mm-hmm. not just people who are disabled, but people who are neurodivergent as well. They might have a sensitivity to texture and skin. And obviously there's that intersection between disability and neurodivergent. You can, just like there is in non-disabled people, you can have neurodivergent disabled people. So I'm talking about autism, ADHD, those kinds of things. And so it's important in lots of ways that we address things from multiple angles, and not, this is why we're not doing it just on, this is what Sandy needs and what Sandy wants all the time. We're going to get people, and we've already had a huge influx of when we put out a request. We need real people with real problems who have said, I need help with X, Y, Z, whatever that thing is. And it will be different for those people. So what we're hoping is by representing these different dilemmas, fashion style dilemmas, that people will be able to say, oh, that's, I struggle with that. Oh, that's amazing. Now I know that bit of information, or now I know where I can buy this item. And within the fashion world, we have adapted fashion, which is clothing that has been adapted to be comfortable when you have different additional needs. But there's also things in the high street on the rail that can be also good for people. So you don't have to have just adapted. So we're going to have a real blend,
That's awesome. You lit up so much when you started talking about that. So I can tell you're really excited about it. So
yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I am so happy that you responded to my message, and we can keep in touch on Instagram. I'm eager to see what's coming, and see you continue to be a force in the world and change our thoughts and perspectives on the people who have disabilities in the world. Yeah. I have grandchildren, so it's very important to me that they are very open. Their mom, my oldest daughter, is super good about them being exposed to stuff and has the books and stuff. And I know that I've seen books with disabled people, you know, so that's amazing. Oh,
good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.